Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
No, how I can talk on now?
What do you mean, how can I? I'll just hold it like this.
Hello, my friends. I am a broken and beaten down Louise McSharry this week. Welcoming you to the podcast. This is Catch Up with Louise McSharry. And I, as I said, am a broken Louise McSharry. I mentioned on last week's podcast that I was headed off to Primavera in Barcelona over the weekend. And I went and I had an amazing time. And then I was like, wow, this is really hitting me hard. I'm feeling so rough and so exhausted and just not right. And I'm super hoarse and, you know, maybe it's just I'm old and I can't handle the sesh anymore. But as it turns out, I have COVID, or the Prima variant, which lots of people are calling it. Loads of people seem to have gotten COVID at Primavera. And it's very unfortunate, and I'm feeling very sorry for myself because I am at home. My husband also has it, and we're keeping our kids home because obviously we were initially testing negative when we got home, so they have spent time with us. So just felt like the right thing to do in case they develop symptoms and indeed develop COVID. So here I am in COVID hell once again. It's just so annoying. Like, I only had it in March. I had it literally the week that we announced this podcast. I was in Wexford at my parents' house. I'd managed to go and isolate there because I had COVID, and now here I am again. And I only had my booster about a month ago because I'm immunocompromised, so I had had an additional dose, and then because I got COVID and blah blah blah, just I wasn't ready for my booster anyway, until the end of May. So yeah, I'm feeling very unlucky and very sorry for myself. But the great thing about this podcast is that I don't need to be with people physically to do it, even though I like to. So I managed to record everything this week remotely. So I hope you will forgive me for sounding a little bit hoarse and a little bit rough. Gordon has literally taken the kids out just to drive around for a while so that I can have a little bit of quiet to record these bits. A lot of effort has gone into this week's pod, but I think it's a good one. There's lots to discuss this week. Later on in the show, we will get into what went down with Liveline and RTE and Dublin Pride this week. I'm going to talk to Cassie Delaney about that, but don't worry, we'll also talk about Britney's wedding and all that kind of crack. And we have got a great chat with PJ Kirby, who you may know from I'm Grand Mom. If you don't listen to the I'm Grand Mom podcast, you are missing out. It is so gas. And PJ and Kevin, who presented, are absolutely lovely. And when I heard this week of something that PJ's doing, I thought, I need everyone to know about this. But first, we might as well get into the news, as always, with the delightful Aoife Moore. Aoife Moore, political correspondent for the Irish Examiner. Hello and welcome.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I think we should probably confront the fact that you are going to have a new job soon, and I'll be introducing you under a new title, because I got many concerned messages from people yesterday saying, "But is she still going to do the podcast?"
Yeah, I got a lot of messages too. Yeah, so I am going to be, from kind of August onward, I'm going to be the new political correspondent for the Sunday Times.
Very exciting.
Which is very exciting. But yeah, I will still be doing the podcast in my pajamas in the mornings. Would never leave you.
I mean, I would be truly devastated. When Aoife and I were talking about this as friends, I was like, yeah, I mean, supportive friend. And then like, but like, I mean, will you still be able to do the podcast? She was like, yes. I was like, oh, phew. Okay, great. Now I'm all guns blazing.
Back to supportive friends.
Yeah. Anyway, we've got loads to talk about this week, as always. And I think we should start with housing, because it is the topic that keeps on giving. We are still in a crisis, or as Michael D. Higgins says, beyond a crisis. And it was a very unusual instance this week, wasn't it, when Michael D. Higgins spoke out on a political issue.
Yeah, so the president, Michael D. Higgins, was invited to open a new a centre for homeless people in Kildare, which I thought in general is a kind of odd thing to ask Michael D. Higgins to do. Mm. I wasn't ultimately very surprised that he made these comments. The president called the housing emergency a great failure and disaster. Zara King from Virgin Media had asked him, you know, had we created the Republic that we had wanted to create. And he said, it's something very much closer to the per law system that we thought we were departing from. He said that there had been government's great failure. It's not a crisis anymore. It's a disaster. And he said, I think we really need to think about meeting the basic needs of people in a republic. Now, the president is allowed to say things like this. There is no constitutional law that says the president cannot say these things, but there is a precedent that they usually don't. So there is a separation of powers between the president, the Houses of the Oireachtas, and the courts.
Mm.
And the president obviously signs bills and the law. He can query if something is constitutional. He's kind of responsible for the constitution, but they're not really supposed to get involved in day-to-day party politics. So a lot of government politicians took great umbrage to the comments. They said that he had overstepped the mark, that it was embarrassing, that he was looking for attention.
Well, yeah, it is embarrassing for them, isn't it?
Well, they said it was embarrassing for Michael B. Higgins. I think we're embarrassed for them.
I'm looking really hard and trying to find someone near me who thinks that Michael D. Higgins should be embarrassed, and I'm not seeing anyone.
Yeah, so like constitutional law professors have been out this week saying, you know, the president is supposed to be politically independent. There is an appropriate line that you're not supposed to cross, but he's not going to get any trouble for this. And I would also say journalists this week could not get politicians on the record to criticize Michael D. Higgins. Right. Michael D. Higgins is the most popular political leader in the country.
Yeah.
They are not going to put their head above water and criticize Michael D. Higgins. And I would venture it's because they know what he's saying is correct.
Is right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, I mean, and I think he was making a point. I was quite proud of myself, because he made the point that, like, it's all well and good to be having like economic success on paper, which we apparently are. And, you know, I've seen government politicians, you know, tweet their happiness at our, you know, perceived international economic
tax
success.
Receipts.
But like, you know, that means nothing. And I wrote a column about this for the Irish Independent a few weeks ago, actually. That means nothing if people can't get homes, or they can't afford to feed their families, or they can't just live in the country. And like, I was delighted to see him speak out.
I also made this point.
Of course you did. You're so
Virgin
smart.
On the Tonight Show, and then got trolled about it for about a week and a half. Listen, I think the point is completely moot when yesterday Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach, was asked, did he agree with Michael D. Higgins? And he said yes. He said, yeah, we have a crisis. Yes, there has been a failure. He said, you know, successive governments have, you know, created this problem, and now we're going to try and do everything that we can to fix it. This is the weirdest thing about Ireland. You will often have government TDs and government ministers say things like, rents are too high, childcare is too high.
Yeah.
Houses are too expensive. So they acknowledge the problem. I think they think it's some kind of like communication strategy of acknowledge the problem. Don't pretend there isn't one, but also pretend that you're like a commentator on national events and not actually someone with the power to change it.
Yeah, it's wild. Anyway, I love to see it, to be honest. Moving on. I actually got a message this week from someone saying, can you and Aoife talk about the Northern Ireland Protocol and the Good Friday Agreement and what is going on there? And I said, we absolutely can and we will, because I think people are very confused. But it all kind of blew up this week, didn't it?
Welcome to Aoife Murr's speciality wheelhouse. Okay, let's go. So the Northern Ireland Protocol, an international treaty to counteract the effects of Brexit on Northern Ireland, was negotiated and signed by Boris Johnson's government. They decided in their great intelligence that they didn't like this international treaty anymore. And it is not because they decided one day this isn't good enough. It is because Boris Johnson is under severe pressure from his backbenchers who are hard Brexiteers. They do not want checks anywhere. They do not want checks in the Irish Sea. They do not want checks in the Irish border. However, Northern Ireland shares a border with an EU member state in the Republic of Ireland. So there has to be checks. Now, as part of the Good Friday Agreement, there cannot be a hard border on the island of Ireland. It would cause so much political instability. It would damage the Good Friday Agreement. We can't have it. Currently, what we have is checks elsewhere. Checks are done in Britain when goods are coming to Northern Ireland because there is a chance they could go further south in the Donegal or wherever else, and they would be checked. So there has to be checks. Now, the Northern Ireland Protocol was a series of agreements and amendments and legislation that would counteract any hard border, any issues like that. What they tabled during the week was, I don't know the right way to say it, they read a horse and cart through the Northern Ireland Protocol and said, we don't want to do this anymore. This is the way we want to do it. You cannot do this. This is an international treaty. You have signed up for this in law. That you cannot go back on your word now. The British government has proven to the entire world that they are not a good trading partner, that they do not to pay attention to international treaties. The Taoiseach, the Foreign Affairs Minister, Simon Coveney, wrote during the week, very forceful, saying this is incredibly bad faith. This is all about politics. It's a fundamental breach of trust. British-Irish relations... Yeah, I would say there has been a lot of headlines this week that said British-Irish relations are the worst they've ever been.
I know.
I find that really insulting.
Yeah, come on.
As someone from Northern Ireland whose family suffered firsthand at the hands of the British government, saying that this is the worst British-Irish relations have ever been is incredibly insulting.
That's a nonsense. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
So let's just bypass that. That's not true, but it's not. They're not where they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
Also, Stormont isn't sitting because the DUP also hates the Northern Ireland Protocol. They don't want checks either. They don't want to be removed from Britain. The Boris Johnson government have said, because they're so worried about Stormont, you can't see me rolling my eyes, but I am. Because they're so worried about Stormont, they have to do this because they want Stormont back up and running. The other Northern Ireland parties support the protocol. So this is very anti-democratic as well. There are 52 MLAs of the 90 MLAs in Stormont wrote to Boris Johnson asking him not to do this. But they say he is only interested in placating the DUP because if it comes to it and he needs a majority and he needs support in Westminster, they always rely on people like the DUP. It's incredibly cynical. Every single business group in Northern Ireland, manufacturing Northern Ireland, all these business groups say that people's order books have doubled. The protocol has been great for Northern Ireland businesses because of their access to the single market. And now that's going to be taken away all because Boris Johnson is on the back foot because he kept having parties. Liz Truss, the Foreign Secretary, wants to replace Boris Johnson. The DUP have lost voters in Northern Ireland and are trying to shore up their base. And the people who are going to suffer are the people in Northern Ireland who are already the most poverty-stricken part of the UK.
Well, there you have it, friends. That is a summation from Aoife Grace Moore. I just thought it was, I saw a headline during the week that was very telling. Taoiseach says UK government don't fully get the Good Friday Agreement. And that kind of...
Do you know how many pages the Good Friday Agreement has, Louise?
How many?
18.
I've actually heard that before because it comes up time and time again, doesn't it? Where
it would take you a swift 15 minutes if you were really reading it.
It's wild. Well, we're actually going to stay with the UK because their antics do not end with the Northern Ireland protocol this week. In fact, there was a huge story about the UK, excuse me, sending flights of people back to Rwanda. So what exactly is happening here?
It's not back to Rwanda.
Oh, sorry.
They are sending... No. These people aren't from Rwanda.
What? This is why we have to do this slot. Guys, I was at Primavera. I have COVID. I have not been plugged in. Okay. Please forgive me.
Yeah, this is why it's even worse.
Yeah, okay. Give it to us.
This is the British Home Secretary, Priti Patel, is the Home Secretary. She has written new legislation that will send asylum seekers who come to Britain to Rwanda. That's people from Iraq, people from Afghanistan. Yes, it's just randomly. Asylum seekers. Yes.
Why? Like, how is she even, how is she made, what? How is she, how is she selling this? Give me her sell.
Not well, let me tell you. So, yeah, they signed a deal with the Rwandan government that they would send X amount of asylum seekers to Rwanda on flights because they didn't want them in Britain. Now, there is a myriad of problems with this, but I'm just going to give you the top lines of it. The European Court of Human Rights intervened 2 days ago and because they have oversight over domestic judicial decisions. Mm. And they said, you cannot do this. You know, there was people pulled off flights. There was an urgent interim measure in regards to one Iraqi national. He was pulled off a flight with half an hour to go. And this is only one of what is going to be, I would say, hundreds of legal challenges against this law. So the UK is no longer part of the EU, but the European Court of Human Rights is not an EU arm. It's the European Council, so they're still part of that.
Yeah.
And now, as if Britain couldn't go any further backward, they are talking about leaving the European Court of Human Rights.
Oh my God.
They said that nothing is off the table when it comes to this. I would also say, and this is just a small side point, Priti Patel and the British government have done a lot to refer to human rights solicitors as if it's an insult, as if it's some kind of slur. Now, she referred in Parliament the other day to the usual suspects, and human rights solicitors who are doing their job in Britain are now reporting death threats to the police. And I would say, this is not something to be taken lightly, because 2 weeks before Pat Finucane, the Belfast human rights solicitor, was shot in front of his children, it was referred to in the House of Commons about human rights solicitors in Northern Ireland. This is not something that we should be taking lightly. These were people doing their job. Everyone, every asylum seeker has the right to fight for their asylum case and not be sent to Rwanda. Now, bear in mind, I've never been to Rwanda. I've actually heard it's great for a holiday, but their record on LGBT rights is not where it should be. And they are planning on sending gay refugees, LGBT refugees, to Rwanda when they have just escaped places like Iraq and Afghanistan.
It's just it's crazy. And I did read as well that like it's completely random selection apparently. So like it doesn't matter where you are in terms of your asylum case. So you could be just about to close it out and like, you know, maybe be getting, you know, your papers or whatever, you know, in the next number of weeks. And then you could be suddenly hightailed to Rwanda. It's like, it's so disgraceful. And the lengths at which people will go to be anti-immigration or anti, you know, asylum, which is just wild to me. Like, you're talking about people who are coming
from
the depths of despair, forced to leave their homes. Yeah, but obviously we see they don't respect human rights, do they?
No.
You know, and that's the thing. Wow, I'm appalled. That's even worse than I thought it was. And that's saying something.
So glad I could bring you that news.
I know, this is why I have to do this with you, Aoife, because I don't claim to be an expert in the news. That's why I have you. okay, I just, because everything's a little bit bleak this week, I wanted to finish on a positive note because there was something lovely that happened in Dublin this week.
I love this. Again, woman. Huge fan. So Olympic boxer Kelly Harrington, campaigner and overall legend Elvis Musk, and cyber psychology expert Professor Mary Aiken have all received the Freedom of Dublin. what a great bunch of lads.
Honestly.
They were given the award for their services to their community, to sports and to academia. They all said it was a huge honor to receive the Freedom of the City, and there's not actually that many women who have had it before.
Yeah.
And people like JFK randomly once got it. Nelson Mandela got it. So they were given it this week. And just really, really lovely. Yeah, so there's 83 people who have had it before. Dr. Tony Holohan was the last one. Father Peter McVerry. All of you too.
Of course.
And Eamon de Valera.
Yeah.
The privileges include that you're exempt from some taxes brought through the city gates, and you have permission to graze sheep on St. Stephen's Green.
I mean, do you think anyone is taking up those little bonuses? I mean, whatever about the sheep, do you think people are taking them up?
I could see Elvis Smith with a couple of sheep.
Yeah, absolutely.
If anyone doesn't know who Alva Smith is, she is a longtime activist and campaigner. Anyone who's involved in Repeal the Eighth and marriage equality would know who she is.
She's been fighting for women's rights for decades.
Yeah.
Decades.
Yeah, she's just an all-round sounder.
Incredible. I'm such a huge fan of hers.
Me too.
And indeed, all three of them. It's great news and lovely to see women get that kind of recognition. Well, Aoife, I'm still reeling from the horror of Rwanda situation. Thank you so much. This is why we need you.
Thank you.
Sometimes you just can't pay attention to everything over the course of a week. You might have an absolute mad one like I'm having.
Let me take the huge personal toll.
Yes. Look, I mean, and thank you for that. Sorry about all the death threats and stuff that you receive along the way. I shouldn't be laughing at that. That's actually truth. She really does.
But you gotta laugh.
You gotta laugh.
Yeah.
Aoife Moore, political correspondent at the Irish Examiner. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now, as I said at the outset, PJ Kirby is the co-host of the absolutely gas on Grand Mam podcast. And PJ recently moved back to Ireland to live in Dublin after years of living in London. And when he came home, he was frightened and disturbed by the spate of recent attacks against the LGBTQIA plus community, as I think every member of that community and indeed every ally is. And he decided he wanted to do something about it. And when I heard what he was doing, I really wanted you to hear it too. Here's PJ. Let's start. For anybody who isn't familiar with you and your work, which I would find shocking and appalling at this stage, PJ Kirby, maybe you could do a little intro of yourself.
Yeah, okay. So I'm PJ Kirby. I'm a Capricorn who loves long walks on the beach. No, I'm joking. I'm obviously a professional dancer who was living in London. And then me and my best friend Kevin started the iconic I'm Grandma podcast, which we've been doing now for years. And I'm a full-time homosexual. And I've just currently moved back to Dublin, where I'm living in Kilmaine. I'm loving life.
And what made you move back?
So I was been in a long distance relationship with my boyfriend for 6 years.
Oh my God.
Which is like ridiculous. Like we were both at a dance intensive, and it was very much, I walked into the room, heads up moment. He's gorgeous, stunning, never been like iconic behavior. He was like doing a routine, like the lights were hitting him in the right way, fell in love. And then we were like together for 6 years, but we were always doing, long distance. I was in London, he was in Ireland. Long story short, he's originally from the Philippines, has a Filipino passport, couldn't get a visa to work in London. I was in the middle of like on my grind, like girl bossing, gatekeeping in London. And then once I got to the stage, then when we went into the pandemic, where I was like, kind of had a moment to be like, what am I doing? Like literally, like the person who I love the most, like in the love of my life, was like in Dublin. He can't come here, I'm just going to go to him. And yeah. I spent two months here in lockdown, and I was like, oh my God, Dublin's actually stunning. So I was like, I'll just go over.
Okay, I've got several questions to ask on that basis. First of all, Dublin is stunning. Tell me about that, because I think a lot of people at the moment in Dublin are having a difficult relationship with Dublin.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you so obviously weird. Liked it.
Yeah, because it's weird, because it's my first time ever living here. So obviously I grew up in Cork, from the accent, like you can hear.
You would never know.
I was there till I was 20. Then I went to London for 9 years. When I came back, it was my first time living in Dublin. So I saw it through like fresh eyes.
Yeah.
And I got here And I remember it was a bit of an adjustment because I was like, I'm no longer gay living in London. Like, what's my identity? And I put up a TikTok being like, so I'm having a bit of identity crisis. Like, who even am I, you know?
Yeah.
And then loads of people were coming to me like, oh my God, welcome to Dublin. And then some people were commenting being like, welcome to depression, more like. And yeah. Everyone was kind of like, Dublin is shit. And then I was kind of like, I was obsessed with it. I'm literally walking around the gaff, Paul Jarlin should hire me because I'm literally like loving everything. I was saying to explaining to people, like, for me, it has all the good bits of London, but it's smaller and people are more friendly. So yeah. Like, it has all the food scene is insane here. It's amazing.
Yeah.
The pubs and clubs here are gorgeous. Mm. The queer scene is like really nice. It could be a bit bigger and there could be a few more nights, but like there's that.
Yeah.
But then in general, like, I'm just like loving it. You're so close to the sea. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just mad about it. Now, the only thing is it is ridiculously expensive.
Yeah.
So like, that's obviously the main thing.
Yeah.
But in terms of like the actual like culture here, I feel like there's loads going on, like, and I feel like just I'm seeing it with fresh eyes. I'm kind of appreciating it more yeah. than people who grew up here.
It's nice to hear that, actually. Mm-hmm. Because I think, yeah, I've been here for so long and you can start to feel just a bit bogged down because obviously the cost yeah. of living is such a huge problem, and you know, by extension there's loads of other problems, and it doesn't, you know, I think a lot of the time we all feel like it's just not being managed very well.
That's yeah,
which is obviously, you know, difficult, but it is a beautiful city, and sometimes I think we need to be reminded of that. And I think it is so important that, you know, I think it's amazing that someone like you, who's such a talent and a creative and has so much going on, is coming back to the city, because that enriches the city. You know, the more people we have here of different walks of life, ways of living, you know, careers, arts, like, you know, all their different talents and abilities, it makes the city better. And at the moment, it does feel like everybody's leaving. So it's lovely to have someone like yeah. you come back. So the reason, I mean, look, I would talk to you all day about anything, but the reason that I wanted to yeah. talk to you specifically this week for the pod is because you posted something on social media the other day that just really hit me, because it was a really solid example of someone seeing a problem and trying to do something about it. So maybe tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, no problem. I do feel, just on the Dublin, I feel like, you know, in work, when you have a new starter who comes in all gung-ho and it's like, it's fine, we'll change things, let's go. And then everyone's like, no, you won't. And then I slowly start to realize, oh no, it's like crippling. So yeah. we're there, but I'm still in this like new starter in yeah. the job mode. So this is why, this is kind of how this kind of came about as well.
Mm.
So I obviously we're hearing about like the really scary homophobic attacks are happening on more of a regular basis at yeah. the moment, not only in Dublin but all around Ireland. And I just felt like as a community we felt like a bit helpless, because like it's yeah. like, what, you can't stop someone. Well, you can put stuff in place and stuff, but in general, like, we felt very like, oh my God, what's happening?
Yeah, walking down the street, what are you gonna do?
Yeah, I was like nervous for like myself, but I was more nervous for like my friends and stuff, and like people in the community who aren't like, I'm always saying, I'm so privileged. I'm obviously a cis white man, 6'4", but like a rugby player, like walking down the street, I'm like physically safer. For example, yeah. if someone tried to attack me, I could like physically fight someone yeah. more than like some of my friends within the queer community. So I was like really worried about them. And I was like, what can we do? So I started talking to GoFundMe. I was chatting to them, and that's the thing, like, when like obviously you work in broadcasting and marketing and stuff, you know one or two people in
yeah.
there. So I was like talking to the GoFundMe team, and I was like, hey, listen, like, they were like, I was like, we want to do something. They were like, yeah, well, up first, let's do something together. So then we started talking to different LGBT charities, and we were just like chatting to see what they are doing within to combat the hate crimes that are happening, or like, are they putting, like, what work do they do within that space? Because obviously there's amazing queer charities all over Ireland, but some of them focus more on like the youth, some of them focus more on like advocacy within like
the trans community and stuff, or,
like
yeah,
and all that, yeah,
yeah.
So, but then we found LGBT Ireland, which do amazing work within the hate crime space. So like, for example, they're campaigning to get effective legislation passed in Ireland to combat hate crime, because there's basically none, like, it's terrible, it's so bad. But then they also do things like they educate the guards on how to properly record and like process a hate crime when it happens within the queer community. So for example, like, obviously if a non-binary person was attacked, and then if a guard from the Sticks comes in and like keeps calling them the wrong pronoun, like that would be even more triggering for them.
Yeah.
So they're trying to like give them training within that space as well. So I chatted with them, was in love with them. I was like obsessed with she, oh my God. And then I really wanted to make sure, I was like, so let's do a fundraiser, let's raise some money. But I didn't want to be like, let's raise some money, like kind of says in the back. I was like, what's like a tangible thing we can work towards?
Yeah.
And it turns out they're looking to hire a key support worker who would like work within the like really necessary, like critical stuff that's happening within the hate crime space when it's happening.
So, yeah.
Like, they deal with like urgent filing cases and stuff, basically.
Yeah. So all that stuff that you just talked about, LGBT yeah. Ireland recognize that there's a need for someone to be specifically working yeah. on that stuff. But obviously nobody has all the money in the world, and especially organizations like that, they never have enough yeah. money. So you said, let's hire someone.
Yeah, so, and then I feel like that was good because it gave us like a clear goal. I was like, this is like a tangible thing like that we can work towards and everyone can get behind. So then they'll work on like the urgent violent cases, they'll work on like homelessness and family support as well. Because there was also, and originally there was like another role where it was going to be just someone and their whole job is to be like, government, wake the fuck up. We need to like get effective legislation in place. And that they're very much like working on like loads of drafting bills and all that stuff. And it's going to take, like, that's a lot of work.
Yeah.
But they got funding for that. So that was amazing. And then they were like, there is this role that we really need that's really down in the weeds, like helping people. So we have this goal of, they were like, I was like, what's like the what would be really helpful sum of money for you to like,
make this happen
and like
yeah.
make this role. And then they were like 20,000 and I was like, let's go 20,000, we can do this. So then we launched the fundraiser, I think it was last Thursday or Friday, so like a few days ago, and we're a quarter of the way there already. So
a quarter, because honestly I was like, this podcast is going to come out and you'll have already met your funding goal.
No,
because people are so generous. But even if you have, like, even if that happens, which would obviously be amazing, I think it's still worth kind of acknowledging that, you know, when you are maybe down in the doldrums and when you're feeling bleak about things, you know, there are ways that you can feel like you're making a difference. And, you know, I think this is such a good example of finding out, like, what is a specific thing that you as an organization helping this with this issue need? Because, you know, we've all gotten really good at fundraising, I think, and the internet makes it a lot easier than it used to be. And so I thought it would be great for people to hear this anyway. But how do you feel about the response so far?
I think, that what you're saying is amazing. I'm blown away by the response and how people just get behind. Because, like, what it's doing then, it's not, obviously, it's raising money for this amazing role that we're trying to fill, right? And that's, like, the kind of, like, logical thing it's doing. But the, emotionally, it's also showing, like, Ireland is supporting the queer community, and it's saying that there's people here. Of course, there's obviously homophobic attacks happening.
Yeah.
At its core, there's a group of these lovely people who are willing to open their wallets to help support us and help and share my video and like help like be a community. And it's just so nice to see that.
Yeah.
And what I always say is like, it's so nice for the like young queer kids to see that. So like, I'm like, if you're like 16 years old and you're queer, and then you see that your aunt is after sharing a fundraiser for a key support worker. It's like, so that's huge. That speaks volumes, you know? It's like
100%. And because I think like during the marriage equality referendum, like that was a really positive and a really difficult time for queer people in Ireland, because obviously you were confronted with the fact that there was a level of negativity about you. And then fortunately, the result indicated that there's a huge amount of support. But that doesn't mean that the level of negativity has disappeared. And you're right, that message of support needs to continue. Hang on one second.
No, you're fine.
What do you need? What can I do for you? Yeah. Can I put something on the phone for you? Would that be better? Or maybe you go downstairs to Dad and have your cup of tea is going to be ready and your chocolate.
Oh my goodness.
No? What do you want? Sorry.
No, you're fine. I've been like, with my niece and nephews, I'd be the same. But I speak to them like adults, which is weird. It's good that you're talking. Like,
what is it that you need? I don't understand. You do want that beside you. Okay, one second.
Okay, no stress.
No.
Whatever you want. Here.
I know. Honest to God. That's the rule for today. Just give them whatever they want. He just didn't want the bag beside him. That was all it was.
Brilliant.
Okay. But yeah,
we love someone who knows what they want.
This is it. But yeah, we just that I think it is that thing of like, you know, people do need to be reminded that there's support and that we're not willing to accept that level of negativity. Actually,
yeah,
that's exactly. not welcome in the society that we live in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and but that it's I always think it's a balance as well, because like even now I'm like you see PM like the government and people coming out being like. Dublin, it just like broke out, like Dublin's LGBT plus free zone or whatever, which means like basically we don't accept homophobia here.
Yeah,
yeah, that's all fair and good. You don't accept homophobia here. So now let's start putting some like effective legislation in place
yeah.
that like underlines that, as opposed to just going, this is a like PR move and we're just going to say, no, we don't like homophobia. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Exactly.
It's a balance.
Yeah, you know? Put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah, but people have been so lovely as well, and like restaurant, local restaurants like Super Ramen are saying like for a pound every time people come in, they're going to add a pound to people's meal. They're going to put that to the fundraiser. There's people doing like charity yoga classes. I'm going to do a charity dance class. I just mm-hmm. feel like it's so it feels like a nice community.
Yeah, that is lovely. Can I ask before I let you go? So as a professional dancer, I mean, how do you do that in Ireland? There's not as much dancing here, obviously, as there is in London.
And to be honest, I'm kind of stepping away from actually like working myself as a professional dancer. Like I don't really do as much. Mm. So like I used to do like music videos and like stuff like that. It was more like commercial hip hop dancing in like in London.
Well, okay, you're obviously you have to tell me like what kind of like who.
It's not as glamorous as you think it is. Like obviously like I'll do the whole reel off the people, but like then it wasn't the best time of my life shooting. Like, but it was like I done two Amory's music videos.
Yeah,
Calvin Harris.
It wasn't the best time of your life.
As in, like, it's like because you're a dancer and they kind of treat you a bit like not like shit,
yeah.
but like it's kind of like okay, like bring the dancers on, dance. They don't really pay you that well.
Yeah.
Like you can't really like live off it.
Yeah.
And you're like training your whole life. Like you do. Like I loved it, and obviously it's a really good experience, and I'm really grateful. Like, but now that I'm not really. You'd be also. I would have been terrified to say this when I was like,
yeah.
I'm like, I don't give a shit. I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
But, like, it kind of like dulled my love for dance a bit, because I'd go to auditions where I've been training my whole life to get to this level, and then like I'd do one move and they'd be like, no, you're too tall, like leave, or like,
fine, yeah.
like, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'd be like, okay. And I kind of dulled my love for it. So now I'm after reconnecting with my love for it, and I do this like queer inclusive, like for any level dance class where we literally just like live our lives. It's called Throwing Shapes.
Yes, I am dying to go. Like I'm coming.
You need to go.
But honestly, because my favorite kind of exercise, I used to do this. Cardio hip hop class in the YMCA when I was like 20 with Jane Shortall, and I loved it. It's the only exercise I've ever enjoyed in my whole life except for Irish dancing. Mm-hmm. So I basically am a dancer is what I'm saying. But the thing is, like, my level of fitness now at this stage is, I mean, I'm like scared of how mortified I'm going to be, but I'm going to do it anyway.
It's so fun, and like literally I'd be buzzing after, because I feel like everyone's like, obviously people are saying they're loving it and stuff, but for me personally as well, I leave buzzing, because it's like, oh, I'm connecting with why I started dancing, and that's like because I love it, you know what I mean?
Well, I love it. We didn't really get to talk about I'm Grand Mom, but it is a brilliant podcast. I would highly recommend to everyone, and I'll put
Thank
a link
you.
in the bio. As you can hear, my son is going mad now, so I think I have to say goodbye.
It's okay.
But thank
no
you
problem.
So much, PJ. You are such a superstar.
Yes.
And
thank you.
I can't wait to see you meet this fundraising goal. I know it's only a matter of time.
Yay. We're going to do it. We're going to smash it.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Today's entertainment and culture chats are a little bit more serious than they usually are, but don't worry, we do get to the silliness. We start by talking about what happened this week with Liveline and RTÉ and Dublin Pride, and then we go to the sublime and the ridiculous, from Britney Spears' wedding to the continuing conversation about Kim Kardashian and that Marilyn Monroe dress. Let's get into it. I'm delighted to be joined once again by Cassie Delaney of Tall Tales Productions. Tall Tales Podcast, Tall Tales Productions. Did I just make that up?
Tall Tales Podcast, Tall Tales whatever. If you Google Tall Tales, you'll find us and we will do whatever you ask us to for money.
Sometimes words come out of my mouth. Sometimes words come out of my mouth and I'm like, is this real life? Okay.
That's true.
We've got a lot to talk about in the world of entertainment and culture this week. And the first story is quite a serious one. And it is of what happened this week with regard to RTÉ and Dublin Pride. And I really wanted to have someone on the show this week who is part of the LGBTQIA plus community mm-hmm. to talk about this, because I think it's really important. You know, unfortunately, it would have been even better if we had a regular trans contributor. And that's something that actually I'll have to work on, because I'd love to have that voice here. But you know, from afar, it seemed like, you know, the shit really hit the fan on Liveline.
Yeah. So what happened, this happened over a couple of days. So it started with a conversation about a certain group of women being rejected from a conference. And then it quickly became, the issue was that they were contesting the definition of the word woman and how that shouldn't be excluded from the Maternity Act.
Yeah.
So there was three programs over the course of a few days that all centered around gender, definitions of gender. And I listened to some of the programming. I listened to one episode entirely in full. And I have to say, I found it incredibly difficult to listen to.
Yeah.
It was very offensive. There was a complete disregard for trans people, for members of the LGBT community. There was misgendering. There was a total lack of awareness and lack of understanding in the nuances and the differences between sex and gender. There was no attempt by a lot of the callers to understand that distinction. Repeatedly, callers from the LGBT community were correcting or alerting the participants of the conversation to the fact that their language was offensive or their language was not inclusive. And I think that some members spoke really, really well and articulated really well their positioning and how the removal of the word woman from the Maternity Act is not an exclusionary process, but it's an inclusion to include all types of parents. Mm. And it's, you know, it's something that needs to happen. It's something that I think, you know, the majority of people are in support of. But what we saw on Liveline was an ignorant group of people arguing it within these ridiculous hypothetical situations.
But also that first contributor, like I listened to, and I also didn't enjoy it, but that first contributor very quickly went from talking about the language in the Maternity Act, which is one conversation that I can see, like, yes, maybe mm-hmm. that is something that you could legitimately be discussing and you could argue is a matter of public debate, 100%. But then she, within minutes, was talking about, and I'm not even going to use the terms that she used because I think they were offensive, but essentially she was suggesting that there would be lots of men who would be pretending to be trans in order to access opportunities in sport and, you know, special treatment yeah. in prison. And like, these are such old arguments that come from a conversation that's been led in the UK. And so just for me, the real purpose or her, what she was really about, was kind of betrayed so quickly, because it went from that Maternity Act conversation to all of a sudden the validity of people being trans, you know, within moments. And, you know, the reality is we have had self-identification for trans people in Ireland, which means that you can decide what gender you mm-hmm. are and have that officially recognized in your paperwork. We've yeah. had that for 7 years, and Lydia Foy fought for it for two decades. And, you know, this debate has already happened here, and yeah. there is no purpose to it now.
And I think the most offensive thing was it was actually quite triggering. It really brought me back to sitting in the back of taxis in 2014, 2015 and listening to people debate the rights that you should have as an LGBT person, which is incredibly traumatic, you know, to listen to someone share their opinion about whether you should be allowed to get married or whether you should be allowed to have kids. And that somehow your sex and your sexual preferences, your sexuality determines who you are as a person and influences the care and the love that you give someone else. And it's just, it's so difficult to constantly be in this situation where we're hearing very ignorant arguments against a community and really ridiculous things being espoused and given the platform like they were on RTE, which is one of the biggest radio shows in the country. I just thought it was really offensive, really dangerous. And I think that, you know, we've seen, we know that language hurts people. We know that words are important. I mean, the whole conversation started apparently because one word is incredibly important. And for them to continue having a conversation and for language and the rights that we've fought for to be completely disregarded was really, really upsetting. And I'm just really disappointed in RTE for it. I think it showed a complete ignorance, lack of awareness. I think their statement and their apology, well, I think their statement was completely lacking in apology, just kind of saying that there should be space to discuss this. And I was like, you cannot have a discussion around gender and gender identity if you're not on the same level. And what we saw were people who had no interest in learning about gender theory debating the rights of trans people. So if you know, cis het people want to have that discussion and want to learn about it, I'm more than happy to have discussions about people around gender and gender theory and gender as a social construct, but they have to do the work behind the scenes because it's not our job as the LGBT community to educate people about stuff. There was a crazy statement made that like certain people just don't subscribe to gender theory and a lot of people don't believe in gender theory. It's like the minute you're born, you're wrapped in a pink or a blue blanket. Like gender theory is bet into us from the minute we exist. So it's ridiculous to say that we don't subscribe to gender as a concept. So yeah, it was just really difficult in a month. It's Pride Month. And this Pride Month, I think honestly, in speaking to a lot of my peers, has felt the heaviest in a really long time. Mm. We've seen an increase in violence against members of the LGBT community in Ireland on the streets, physical, unprompted violence for just existing. Mm. There is a consistent fear. There is an anxiety about, you know, disclosing that you're a member of the LGBT community in workplaces. All that persists. And then simple things like PJ Kirby is organizing a fundraiser to raise vital funds to get a support worker. For
just spoke to him on the podcast in this
amazing. I'm so
people
glad.
Will be familiar with that by the time we get to this part of the podcast.
I'm so glad. But like to see that during Pride Month, where you're walking through town and seeing the flags everywhere, seeing buildings wrapped in rainbows, seeing the icons of all these corporations, you know, rainbow washed on LinkedIn. And then to see that fundraiser that should have raised 20 grand within a day, it should have been a no-brainer, everyone jumping in. And for me, it was really hurtful to go through that fundraiser and see that it's, again, my peers and members of the LGBT community that are putting in their fivers, tenners, 50 quids to try and get that fund up to a significant amount. And you have the big corporations, the ones who pretend to be allies during this month, doing nothing. And then you have a conversation like that on Liveline. And it just feels like nothing's changing.
Yeah.
So it was really hard, and very disappointing. And I have a lot of anger towards them for
it. I can understand it, because the problem is, and like what it comes down to is, people will say, well, free speech, and it's like, okay, yeah, sure. I mean, first of all, we don't actually have protected free speech in this country, but aside from that, like, yes, obviously people need to be able to have conversations, but there's a difference between having a conversation at the dinner table with your uncle who doesn't have a clue about LGBT rights or trans people or anything to do with kind of, you know, the way that people exist within gender, and to have that on national radio when there could be thousands of people listening. Because what you do when you have that conversation on national radio, when you invite the uncle who doesn't have a clue on the radio to espouse their misinformed and based on nothing opinions, then you add validity to that argument, and you give other people ideas, and you create the nexus of something that could build into something really dangerous. And we know that people who are trans and non-binary are some of the most vulnerable people in any community anywhere. They also represent, as Ben Peachy said last week, about 1% of the community. So you're talking about a tiny, extremely vulnerable minority. And to put them on blast like that on the national broadcaster and not think that there might be dangerous consequences as a result of it is completely irresponsible. And to be honest, I'm so glad I don't work there right now, because if I was working there and I had to try and continue working there, knowing that this kind of thing had happened and just pretending like it hadn't, which is kind of what you have to do, to be honest, when you work there, would be excruciating for me. And I really feel for all of the right-minded, informed and LGBTQIA plus people who work there right now.
Yeah, same. I really do. I think it's a really, really difficult position to be in. And I just think it's really disappointing. They have a duty of care as the national broadcaster to facilitate conversation. So they need to make sure that the people they have in place facilitating those conversations are informed.
Yeah.
And they did not do that.
But we have to acknowledge, of course, that Dublin Pride did end their media partnership with RTÉ as a result of these conversations.
I stand by Dublin Pride. It was a really difficult decision for them, no doubt, but they've done the right thing.
Yeah. Okay, next up, Britney's wedding.
Oh my God.
Now for something completely different. Britney got married.
It's still very, very camp. Britney got married.
Yeah.
And it, the greatest looking party of all time, you know, very privately, I suppose, in her home. But that image where you had Madonna, who's in it? Madonna, Drew Barrymore, Britney.
It's Selena Gomez? Is it?
Like,
it's wild.
To be a fly on the wall at that wedding.
Like, I know.
Oh my God, what I wouldn't give to have been there.
And also everyone's just so happy for her.
That's it. I mean, it's been a tough couple of years for our Britney. She's really been through the mills. But there was a 10-minute ceremony, which I'm all for. Mm-hmm. A little quick wedding and big party. And in attendance, you had the likes of Madonna, Selena Gomez, Drew Barrymore, Paris Hilton, Kathy Hilton, of course, Ansel Elgort, Will.i.am. You know,
Ansel
Donna
Elgort.
Tata Versace.
That's a bit of a weird one.
Yeah, but
the problematic Ansel Elgort. Okay.
He was there having a party. One of the details I love about this is that they didn't have a first dance, but instead Selena Gomez, Madonna and Britney danced to Toxic, and then Paris did a rendition of Stars Are Blind. That's how I want to get married.
Perfect.
I too would like to forego the first dance to instead sing Toxic with Madonna.
I love it. And of course, none of Britney's family were there.
Yes.
But I suppose that's for the best, given the situation.
And look, sometimes you get to choose your family, and that is fine too. So it wasn't without its drama, though, because ex-husband Jason Alexander, who I've just entirely forgot about.
Yeah.
Forgot this.
Me too until now.
Yeah. 55-hour marriage. Was charged with stalking Britney after he appeared totally unannounced at the wedding. So he streamed a live video on Instagram at the wedding venue and claiming that Britney had invited him, saying that he was there to crash the wedding. Obviously, he was met by security guards, arrested and taken to a local jail. And now they have issued a restraining order against him. Mad behavior, but you know, it's what we expect from our fave celebs.
There had to be something, didn't there, really?
There had to be. Yeah.
Now moving on, speaking of language being important, Lizzo, I feel like it dealt with criticism really well this week.
Yes. I'm impressed with the speed at which this happened. So Lizzo released her new song, Girls, spelled G-R-R-L-S. It's a bop, a banger. It's a great song. Really enjoyed it. I think I came to it after the lyric change, so I didn't actually pick up on it on my listen of it. But in the opening verse, she had included a derogatory slur that was brought to attention by a member of... a disabled activist called Hannah Davini, who said that, you know, she has cerebral palsy and the literal classification as spastic diplegia meant that the word that Lizzo had used, which I don't want to repeat, but the word that Lizzo had used in the opening of the song was considered offensive.
Yeah.
But immediately.
I've heard that because it's not a word that we use very often here in Ireland, but in America growing up, it would have been a word that would have been used a lot. And I remember learning, oh, okay, that's actually, you know, really offensive to people who have this actual condition. And, you know, we're just not going to do that anymore. Lizzo obviously missed that day.
Yeah. So Lizzo's, I think when you look at it in the context of it, assume the definition was something different. You know, the definition was to mean like crazy or like, you know, angered or whatever.
Freaking out. Yeah.
That was freaking out, essentially. Yeah. But
although there would be people who would say that crazy is also, anyway, look, we won't go down that
road.
Yeah,
no, it is. We're just
yeah,
treading carefully.
Honestly.
But what I did find very impressive was the speed at which you changed it, and not just changed it, changed the song. Like you can't find the original version of the song.
Yeah.
Changed it super quickly on all the streaming platforms and apologized very profusely, said that she was here to listen, learn, etc., and takes full responsibility for the lyric and an apology. And I think that's just how you do it. We all make mistakes.
Yeah.
We all learn. You know, we go, life is for learning.
Yeah.
Sometimes we use language that isn't appropriate. And yeah.
You just have to learn.
Move on, Jane.
One sec, yeah. Sorry.
Hey, I have COVID, so if you just want to put them down there, I'll stay far away from you. Thanks.
Sorry, I had to like stay a million miles away from the post on. Yeah, I think this is the thing, is that we like everyone's going to make mistakes and nobody is expecting anyone to be the perfect product. But if you are someone who is high profile and who has a million people listening to them or hundreds of thousands of people listening to them, you have to hold yourself to a higher standard. And that's just it, mm-hmm. you know? And what you should do is listen to people who know better than you. Listen to members of the community you're talking about. Acknowledge your mistake. Apologize and correct it where possible. And that's exactly what she did.
Yeah. And it was great.
Yeah. And now and we I can all I've enjoy heard, the song.
Exactly, because it is a bop and a banger. And I've heard other activists speak about it, and they seem to be satisfied with the response and how Lizzo dealt with the situation. So I'm taking my lead from them.
Yeah.
And well done to Lizzo.
Yeah, I was going to say that I thought that was great as well, that so many, because I saw lots of kind of disability activists who I follow on social media saying that they were really just disappointed by it, and then saying that they were really happy with the response. And I know there will always be people who will feel that she should have known better from the get-go. But you know, you
we
can't
don't. Look, we don't yeah nobody does. We grow up and we are a product of the culture that we grow up in, and sometimes words change and
we miss it,
the environment change, and we miss it, right? So we're all trying our best, we're all here to learn, and nobody wants to cause offense.
As my friend Jan says, we're all good people trying our best.
That's it.
Okay, before we
one person trying their best.
Yeah.
Okay. I was trying to segue, you were trying to segue.
A jewel segue.
That was tenuous.
Kim K, I think she is trying her best.
Yes. So she is constantly, this just is the tale that's never ending. This is worse than the blue gold dress saga.
Honestly.
This dress saga, right? So photos have emerged of Kim wearing the, you know, she famously wore the Marilyn Monroe dress, right? And now photos are emerging apparently showing wear and tear and damage done to the seams, and people are complaining about it, right? People did not know about this dress before Kim K wore it. Like, nobody was like, what state is Marilyn Monroe's dress in? Also, I think important to note, it's not like this dress was sitting pretty in, like, you know, the Louvre. It was in Ripley's Can You Believe It Museum, which
Cassie, let's give Ripley's their rightly title, the correct title. Ripley's, believe it or not.
Or not, sorry, right? Which is in its own way a cultural institution, but it's not somewhere you go for fine art.
No.
You know? So it was sitting there. I think it's obviously naturally gotten some wear and tear over time, and it's old, it's going to be damaged, but everyone's hounding Kim for wearing the dress, saying all the money in the world, could you not have produced a replica? Which there is a point, but I would like to think now, and I don't know if I necessarily believe this, but I would like to think that Kim chose to wear the exact dress because she's making a comment on celebrity culture. I think that's giving her too much credit.
Well, apparently,
in my mind,
the whole thing was that she wore the dress only for the red carpet bit and then did change into a replica. But she lost all the weight, apparently, and she, you know, wore like those really high glass or Perspex platforms so that the dress didn't go on the ground, like, in great effort. I think because there was such a big deal about the fact that there was such great effort made in to preserve the dress, that then when this week some collector went went and took photos of the dress in the museum and said that there was, you know, there was before and after photos of there being more damage than there was before. But like, I mean, of course there was.
But also everything looks like a nail when you have a hammer. Like if you're looking for, if you're looking for damage, you're going to find it. No one was going and taking photos and inspecting this dress before the gala. So it's just a classic case of they want to be angry at Kim for something or other. And this is something they have on her now. But leave her at it. Like, let the dress go back into its glass box in Ripley's. Can you believe it? Or believe it or not. What is it called?
Believe it or not. If it was Irish, it would be Ripley's. Can you believe it?
Can you believe? So yeah, leave her. Just leave her alone.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just a dress. I know it's a dress with a significant cultural, with loads of cultural significance, but lads, it's just a dress.
Yeah. That we didn't know about 2 months ago. That's the bit that you're so furious about this dress you didn't even know existed. Like if you did know and you're like a Marilyn Monroe obsessive and you collect, or like you would love to collect, then you're, as far as I'm concerned, that's fair enough. I can understand why you'd be angry. But so many people randomly on the internet who just like didn't even know and don't particularly care if they're honest with themselves or irate.
And if it was part of a massive, you know, fashion artistic display somewhere that was being preserved and was part of a larger collection, I would be like, oh, maybe she shouldn't have taken it. But it's probably next to a piece of toast with Jesus's face in it. Like, it's not.
Yes. And on that note, Cassie Delaney of Tall Tales, thank you so, so much for joining me this week. Now it is just about time for me to finish up, but before I go, I don't have a lot of recommendations because I've just been in COVID hell with the kids. And I mean, I would recommend Primavera definitely as a festival. I had a lot of fun, a lot of fun. The great thing about going to a festival like Primavera is that it happens in Barcelona. Barcelona is one of my favorite cities to visit. It is so beautiful. There's a beach. There's beautiful architecture. The food is incredible. And you get to stay in like apartments or houses or whatever, hotels. So you go to the festival in the evening and then you've got all day to just be in Barcelona. Now, granted, we were sleeping until like 12. 1-2 o'clock, but you know what I mean, you get a bit of the city and you get all the music, and yeah, we definitely had a superb time. But one recommendation I will make specifically from Barcelona is Come Restaurant, C-O-M-E. It is a fine dining Mexican restaurant in Barcelona and it is stunning. Like, it is one of the best eating experiences, if not the best, I've ever had in my entire life. So it's the restaurant of Chef Paco Mendez. Paco Mendez is, if you're into chefs and food, you'll know about him because he worked with the Adria brothers for years, who were responsible for some of the best restaurants in the world in Spain, that happened to be in Spain. Restaurants like El Bulli, Arzac and San Sebastian, although that's actually not an Adria brothers restaurant, but basically Paco Mendez is the shit, and he is one of the kings of Mexican gastronomy. So anyway, he has this new restaurant in Barcelona called Come Restaurant, Come, C-O-M-E, and it is going to be Michelin starred soon. Like, I have absolutely no doubt about that. But at the moment, you can actually get a booking really easily. Like, we went and were blown away by it, and our friend got a booking for the following week. It's not cheap, but it's not insane. If you live in the world of fine dining, if that's something that you like to do from time to time, you'll know that the prices can be really wild. But I actually felt like this was quite reasonable for what we had. We got their festival, which is like a tasting menu, and the food, like, my mouth is literally watering talking about it. The food was spectacular. I started crying during one of the courses. Now, I was hungover, but like, it was just perfect. The flavors, like, I could go on about it forever, but I know not everybody's into food, so I won't go on too long. But the other aspects of it that were really super were, first of all, the margaritas. I mean, mind blowing. There's one called the Hot and Cold, where it's a frozen margarita, but then they kind of put this warm foam on the top. so good. Like, I feel at the moment like I will never drink again, but I would drink one of those. And but the other thing was the service was just mind-blowing. We walked into the restaurant and we were introduced to every member of staff. And that sounds like it might be a bit intense, but it was actually just lovely. Like the whole, all of the kitchen were just standing there like, hey, welcome. Like it was super friendly. It didn't feel over the top. It just felt lovely. And our, are we still using the word waitress? But the woman who was bringing us our food or managing our table for most of the meal was, we were all just absolutely in love with her. She was from Mexico herself, so she was able to talk about the food with real like love. It was just, it was spectacular. So if you have a weekend or a weekday or whatever, they're open Wednesday to Sunday in Barcelona. I fully paid for the meal. I would pay for it again. I can't recommend it enough. So there you go. One deeply impassioned recommendation this week. I'm going to sleep literally when the kids are going to sleep because whatever brand of COVID I have is mainly just an exhaustion one. There's other symptoms, but the main thing is my bones just feel like they're made of lead and I feel like I could sleep for 7 days. So there's not a lot of time for consuming anything else. But anyway, look, we are where we are. Next week, I won't have COVID and I'll be absolutely delighted to be chatting to you. And in the meantime, I hope you have a truly, truly lovely one. If you are also suffering with this dreaded virus, which just absolutely will not go away, or indeed any other aspect of life's challenges, I'm sending you strength and solidarity this week. And I will talk to you next Friday.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.